Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
One of the greatest movie stars in the history of Hollywood is gone. Elizabeth Taylor was a real star. She was called the Queen of Hollywood. That's a title Hollywood doesn't throw around lightly.
Hollywood legend Elizabeth Taylor's glittering career spanned 50 motion pictures over seven decades.
Elizabeth was really an icon, a legend. It was just this beauty from inside that just poured out of her.
She really was the biggest star on the planet. I mean, there is nobody who could compare.
Not just a movie star, Elizabeth Taylor blazed a trail as a multi-million dollar businesswoman.
She was a workaholic. She was constantly on.
But as well as glittering highs, she also suffered shattering lows, with failed relationships, illness, and rumors of addictions hitting headlines.
She was a very heavy drinker.
Elizabeth was hospitalized more than 100 times in her life.
But on March 23rd, 2011, Elizabeth Taylor finally lost her fight for life. She died of a cardiac arrest in Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles.
Many conditions can lead to cardiac arrest, including heart disease, lung disease, alcohol and drug abuse, and high blood pressure. It appears that Elizabeth's life was blighted by injuries, illness, and addictions. So determining her precise cause of death won't be easy.
Dr. Michael Hunter is a world-renowned forensic pathologist and the chief medical examiner in one of America's biggest cities. He's performed over 4,000 autopsies to investigate and reveal the cause of death.
Elizabeth Taylor's cause of death is stated on the death certificate as cardiac arrest, but this doesn't tell the full story. With her long history of illness and addictions, I'm going to have to go back to the beginning and investigate every aspect of her life in forensic detail if I'm going to get to the bottom of what caused the death of this Hollywood icon.
January 29th, 2011. Elizabeth Taylor's home, Bel Air, California. 78 days before her death, friends and family are gathering to celebrate her 79th birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
The party is being thrown 1 month early due to an impending hospital visit for heart checkups. For the past 10 years, Elizabeth's health has been getting worse, and due to severe back problems, she uses a wheelchair. Despite her frailness, Elizabeth is in good spirits and feeling optimistic about the future.
You're all here, but I'm not dead yet.
Elizabeth Taylor may have had to use a wheelchair, but in this last picture of her at her birthday party, she looks quite well for a 79-year-old. Her eyes look bright, and she seems in good spirits. There is nothing that would immediately concern me about her appearance.
Elizabeth Rosamond Taylor was born in London, England on February 27, 1932, to wealthy American expatriates. Elizabeth's mother, Sarah, was a former stage actress, and her father, Francis, was a successful art dealer.
J. Randy Teraborelli, biographer.
He was a very sophisticated man. He was a very handsome man. What he lacked was a forceful personality. He was never able to go up against his wife in any way. She won every argument, and she pretty much ruled that household.
Elizabeth was her mother's pride and joy, who had great plans for her daughter's future.
Well, Sarah Taylor is sort of your typical stage mother in the sense that she had a failed career as an actress. So when Elizabeth was born, Sarah took hold of Elizabeth and began to mold her into the image of what she wanted to be herself as an actress.
In 1939, at the outset of World War II, the Taylor family moved back to America and settled in Los Angeles, where Elizabeth's mother pushed to get her daughter into Hollywood. The move paid off, and after securing a few minor movie parts, at the age of 12, Elizabeth's beauty and talent got her the starring role in National Velvet. She was now under the tight control of MGM Studios.
They were searching around for a little girl, an English girl. There weren't very many of those in America during the war. And I desperately wanted the part because it was me. It was my whole life, my relationship and love for horses.
Elizabeth went on to make 49 more movies and won 2 Academy Awards.
I've had more fun in the back seat of a 39 Ford than I could ever have in the vault of the Chase National Bank.
Larry Wagoner, Elizabeth Taylor's stylist.
She was like this amazingly beautiful creature on camera, like one of the most amazing that you've ever seen.
Elizabeth Taylor was indeed a stunning beauty, but I have found something deep in her records which helps explain her key attributes, her luscious eyelashes. Elizabeth was born with a rare condition called lymphedema distichiasis syndrome, or LDS, which gave her 2 extra rows of eyelashes. LDS is caused by a mutation of the FOXC2 gene. This results in extra eyelashes growing from the duct of the gland at the edge of the eyelids. It can affect either the upper or lower eyelids, but usually affects both, as it did in Elizabeth's case. This condition may have been an asset in terms of her beauty, but LDS can also affect other parts of the body. I need to look further into this condition to see what effect, if any, it had on her.
February 7th, 2011. Bel Air, California, 44 days before her death. Elizabeth is enjoying a visit from her old friend, actress Debbie Reynolds. They fell out in the late 1950s when Debbie's first husband, singer Eddie Fisher, left her to marry Elizabeth. But the pair put the dispute behind them decades ago, and now Debbie often helps Elizabeth, who is in constant discomfort.
It's not unusual for a woman in her 70s to use a wheelchair, but I've discovered Elizabeth used one throughout much of her life, and that was due to chronic pain.
She told me once that the chronic pain was unbearable, that it had informed every aspect of her life and every decision that she made.
Will Toffin, former bodyguard.
I knew when she was in pain because we could usually tell when she got very quiet and she got a little bit edgy. That was always a sign.
My research has revealed that Elizabeth's pain was caused by another birth defect, scoliosis, curvature of the spine. Scoliosis causes the spine to curve to the left or to the right. It can affect the upper or lower back, and a double curvature can occur, giving the spine an S shape. This S shape is what Elizabeth had. Scoliosis puts pressure on the spinal discs, nerves, muscles, and ligaments, and as a person ages, the spinal discs, which act as shock absorbers between the vertebra, become worn, only adding to the pain. I can see that Elizabeth never had surgery to treat her scoliosis, but I've also found evidence of further damage done to her spine following 2 freak accidents later in life.
1944, Alhambra, California. 12-year-old Elizabeth Taylor was filming her breakthrough hit movie, National Velvet. But during a riding stunt, where she had to fall from the horse, she landed badly on her back. Despite intense pain, Elizabeth got straight back into the saddle.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
Her mother drummed into her the fact that failure was simply not an option. But if it was like, well, no, we need to please the studio.
November 1956, Miami Coast, Florida. 12 years after her riding accident, Elizabeth's back would be severely damaged for a second time.
On deeper investigation, I've found out that while Elizabeth was on board a yacht one night with her third husband, Mike Todd, She slipped and fell hard on her tailbone. The fall was so bad that she was taken immediately to Columbia Hospital.
December 8, 1956. Columbia Presbyterian Hospital, New York.
Surgeons discovered that she had in fact crushed three of her spinal discs and surrounding vertebra, which would account for her agonizing pain. As a result, Elizabeth underwent a highly invasive and intricate back procedure called vertebral body replacement, or VBR. During surgery, the damaged vertebra and surrounding disc are removed to relieve pressure on the nerve. A metal post containing bone graft material is then inserted and secured with metal rods until the bone graft has fused.
Despite a four-hour operation, the surgery was only partially successful, and back issues continued to plague Elizabeth for the rest of her life.
You could tell that this still affected her, but never complained. It was just in the injury that had been going on for years and years, you know. I don't think it was ever sort of resolved.
While I don't believe Elizabeth's complicated back conditions were directly linked to her death, I have found evidence that the pain she suffered went on to have a deadly effect.
You know, we're in a time right now where technology has shown how far we've truly come. I mean, you can order a pizza from your phone. You can use your laptop to connect with family and friends. It's really impressive how easily we're able to stay connected in so many different ways with all of the different advancements. But one thing has been the same, coloring our hair. The options are either go to a traditional salon, spend lots of time and money, or just grab a box of hair color at the drugstore, which you never quite know what color you're going to get. It almost always dries out my hair. It's just not the best option. But now there's a new way, Madison Reed. It took a strong woman to shake up the hair coloring world, and Amy Arrett did just that with Madison Reed, the company she named after her daughter, which is really awesome. And if you're thinking, okay, but how do I match my color? Don't worry, Madison Reed gives you all the tools you need so you can color with confidence. Get ammonia-free, multidimensional hair color delivered right to your door, starting at $22. Visit madison-reed.com. That's madison-reed.com. And now, Autopsy listeners can get 10% off plus free shipping on your first color kit. Use code LASTHOURS. That's code LASTHOURS.
On March 23rd, 2011, the legendary Hollywood actress Elizabeth Taylor died of a cardiac arrest in Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles, after a lifetime of illness and injury. Top forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is examining the actress's complicated medical history to uncover the underlying reason for her death.
So far, I've found that Elizabeth Taylor endured back pain all her life due to the birth defect scoliosis. This was later compounded by two freak accidents, which resulted in extensive surgery to her back. Although in itself, this is not life-threatening, I can see that this led to complications which lasted her entire life.
February 11th, 2011. Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles. 42 days before Elizabeth Taylor's death, Elizabeth has been experiencing breathing problems and arrives at the hospital to undergo a series of heart checks.
There's a whole host of reasons why a 79-year-old is having breathing difficulties and heart problems. But looking deep into her notes, I found something of great concern which could be the root cause of Elizabeth's symptoms. And that's an addiction to painkillers.
Elizabeth began taking painkillers after her riding accident in 1944 and continued to take them well into later life, something her bodyguard Will Toffin would often witness.
Elizabeth Taylor was taking narcotic painkillers. I can't remember the names of the drugs, but they were opiates.
Opiates are derived from opium, and when an opiate is taken, it stimulates the opioid receptors in the brain, which control the pain messages throughout the body. While these drugs are highly effective at giving pain relief, their long-term use can cause liver damage, breathing difficulties, depression, and can suppress the immune system. Another dark side of these is that they are highly addictive. And looking at accounts of her early career, I can see that opiates weren't the only drugs Elizabeth was dependent on throughout her life.
When Elizabeth was a teenager working at MGM, the hours were ridiculous. She had to be at the studio very early in the morning, and they acted as the actress's doctors, and they were giving them pills to keep them going. They gave them pills to keep them awake. They gave them pills to knock them out at night.
These pills would have been stimulants such as amphetamines and downers, tranquilizers, both of which are highly addictive. And together, they are a very dangerous combination. As well as a high risk of overdosing, these drugs put huge pressure on the heart and respiratory system and can cause seizures, heart failure, and even cardiac arrest.
In the studio, don't forget, this is almost like a parental figure. This is, you know, someone that she trusts. So if they're sanctioning this and saying it's okay, then it's not a big leap if you fast forward to, you know, to understand that she would have been very comfortable doing this when she felt low, when she felt unwell.
Elizabeth's addiction to tranquilizers was further compounded by the many tragedies in her life, particularly her 8 marriages and 7 divorces. First to hotel heir Nicky Hilton, followed by actor Michael Wilding, producer Mike Todd, singer Eddie Fisher, actor Richard Burton, twice, Senator John Warner, and construction worker Larry Fortensky. But it was her 3rd marriage to Mike Todd where Elizabeth thought she had found marital bliss.
He was a lot of fun, and he brought to her life a sort of a sense of wonderment that she felt that she'd been missing.
But after only a year of marriage, tragedy struck. March 22, 1958. Elizabeth Taylor's home, Bel Air, California. Elizabeth received the devastating news that her new husband had been killed in a plane crash.
It really pushed her over the deep end. She was actually being prescribed a lot of medication to get through the grieving process over Mike Todd.
At the time, Elizabeth was still under the iron fist of MGM, who had little compassion for a grieving young widow.
Well, the studio didn't make it very easy for me. It was like, you go back on Monday or else.
She's now the sole provider for her children, and she just needs to kind of pull her socks up, as it were, and get on with it. It's not surprising that she would have fallen to sort of those, you know, comfortable places of, you know, I'm going to pop a pill to get through this.
And Dr. Hunter has discovered some explosive evidence that sheds new light on the extent of Elizabeth's drug taking.
I have here a report dated 1990 by the Attorney General of California, who conducted a 2-year investigation into 3 of Elizabeth's personal physicians. It concluded that over a period of less than 10 years, the actress had been given hundreds of prescriptions for opiates, hypnotics, painkillers, tranquilizers, antidepressants, and stimulants.
At one point in 1983, she was prescribed 600 pills in 17 days. She was doctor shopping like crazy.
So she never, like, took possession, came to the door, and signed for the pills herself. They would come to me, I would sign for them, and then give them to Elizabeth.
This suggests that Elizabeth has been taking a lethal cocktail of prescription medications for over 40 years. It's a staggering assault on her body with undeniable long-term consequences on the major organs, such as the liver, the kidneys, and the heart. I'm also amazed at how she seemed quite unaffected by what the report describes as an amount to fuel an army.
In the entire time I was with her, I never saw the medication affect her so that she couldn't work. Or even in her off hours, I never saw her stumble, or she never appeared intoxicated at any time. Then that's the truth.
This idea of being reliant on medication, of being reliant on something external to allow you to get through the day, becomes quite ingrained in her mind and kind of ingrained in her process of how do I cope, what do I do when things go wrong. So it's not surprising that later in her life we see those addiction issues coming up.
I can see that Elizabeth Taylor claimed to have beaten her addiction to prescription medications by the time she was 70, almost 10 years before she died. But I can't rule out that the long-term abuse of multiple prescription pills didn't cause damage to her body that was in some way related to her death.
But Dr. Hunter has found evidence of another deadly addiction which may have contributed to her cardiac arrest.
Hi, everyone. This is Jillian with Court Junkie. Court Junkie is a true crime podcast that covers court cases and criminal trials using audio clips and interviews with people close to the cases. Court Junkie is available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
Legendary film actress Elizabeth Taylor died of a cardiac arrest on March 23, 2011, after a lifetime battling illness, addictions, and injuries. World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating the case to finally determine what led to Elizabeth's fatal cardiac arrest. February 16, 2011, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles. 35 days before Elizabeth Taylor's death. Elizabeth arrived at the hospital 5 days ago after suffering from breathing problems. The doctors are concerned about her heart and are closely monitoring her.
Not much information was released about Elizabeth Taylor's condition in hospital, which led to frenzied speculation in the press about what was actually going on in that room. None of us reporting it at the time knew exactly what to think.
Wow. There's a lot Elizabeth has her children by her side, and despite her health issues, she appears in good spirits and is hoping she'll be able to go home soon.
I can see that Elizabeth's cardiac issues were a developing problem. Her notes state that 5 years earlier, doctors had found a valve in her heart, the mitral valve, wasn't functioning properly. The mitral valve is located between the two left chambers of the heart, and this ensures oxygenated blood flows from the lung to the heart in one direction. But if the valve becomes loose, blood leaks back into the lung and reduces the blood supply to the heart, leading to heart failure and possible death.
October 7th, 2009, California. Elizabeth undergoes a groundbreaking procedure to repair her faulty valve.
Doctors performed an experimental keyhole procedure to fix it, as Elizabeth wouldn't have been strong enough for the usual open-heart surgery. During the procedure, a catheter is passed through the femoral vein in the groin, which guides a clip up into the heart and is used to tighten the mitral valve. The mitral valve repair usually lasts around 5 years or so. It's possible that Elizabeth's heart problems directly before her death in 2011 are a sign that the repair was failing. However, I've discovered something else in her medical history that can have a catastrophic effect on the heart, and that's alcohol abuse.
Elizabeth's love of alcohol was prodigious. She could equally well enjoy a large gin and tonic or a glassful of scotch or even bourbon and soda. It didn't really matter to her.
The first time I realized I had to be careful of her alcohol intake was when she asked me if I would mix her a drink. So I said, certainly, I said. And it was the first time I'd mixed her a drink. I said, how do you take it? She took like an 8-ounce glass and threw in some ice, and she filled it with vodka, and maybe about an inch from the top, she poured in a little bit of orange juice, just enough to give it some coloring.
Elizabeth's drinking began as a teenager at MGM.
When I was about 15 or 16, I did start to rebel, and I didn't like L.B. Mayer at all. I didn't like his attitude toward me, which was one of just a piece of property.
But it was her first husband who really fueled her need for alcohol. September 1950, Elizabeth Taylor's home, Bel Air. Elizabeth had been married to renowned playboy and hotel heir Nicky Hilton for just 4 months. Despite appearing to be the glittering showbiz couple, behind the scenes, things had quickly turned sour.
He was an alcoholic. He was a gambler.
Where were you?
Elizabeth divorced Nicky Hilton just 9 months after tying the knot. But one thing she didn't escape from was alcohol. But her alcoholism went to another level with husband number five. March 1962, Rome. Elizabeth Taylor and actor Richard Burton were on set filming the blockbuster Cleopatra.
I will what?
On your knees.
You dare ask the proconsul of Rome?
I asked it of Julius Caesar. I demand it of you. The first day on the set, he was hungover and very vulnerable, and his hands were shaking. He asked me to hold a coffee cup up to his lips, and I was gone. He was so sweet.
It was immediately a deeply passionate love affair, with everything that meant. But people still thought it wasn't going to last. They never had lasted before, but he had never fallen in love with anybody like Elizabeth Taylor before.
She divorced her then-husband Eddie Fisher in 1964 and married Richard Burton just 9 days later. But it was a marriage marred by alcohol abuse.
His drink was compulsive. And he drank a very potent drink, port. And he drank it. Sometimes he had to hold the mug, the cup, in his hands. You couldn't stop him drinking. I mean, he would get violent if you did. And if Richard drank, she drank. But I never saw her drunk. I think that's one of the things, apparently, that Richard was furious about, that she could drink him under the table.
I think we were two very volatile people. As a matter of fact, we were like two atom bombs. And when we'd go off together, there'd be this tremendous explosion.
But years of fights and alcohol abuse took their toll. Eventually, the marriage failed. And after 10 years together, they divorced. It was Elizabeth's sixth divorce. Unexpectedly, she and Burton remarried a year later. But after 9 months, that also failed.
Elizabeth was raised to not accept failure. I mean, her mother never accepted failure. And it was difficult for Elizabeth. So these marital failures also contributed to her just being very unhappy with herself and to having very low self-esteem.
As a consequence, one has to wonder if those, you know, feelings of failure that were never there in her professional life may have felt very real in her personal life.
Alcoholism can have a devastating effect on the body. Not only does it damage the liver, but it also weakens the heart, which means blood isn't pumped efficiently. It also significantly raises blood pressure, increasing the risk of stroke and heart attack.
By the 1980s, Elizabeth's drinking came to a head. December 2nd, 1983, St. John's Hospital, California. While Elizabeth is in the hospital for a few days to have treatment for a blockage in her bowel, her children, her brother, sister-in-law, and her childhood acting friend, Roddy McDowell, pay a surprise visit.
Her family and friends held an intervention. They were very worried about her, and they needed to get her into treatment.
They have lists of things that they have witnessed you do that have embarrassed them, humiliated them, whatever. And they preface what they're going to say with, "I love you, Mom, but I have seen you do this, and the reason I'm telling this to you is because I want you to live."
She was really scared, and she was also very angry that she wasn't going to go into treatment, that she needed time to think about it. Of course, she had a bottle of Jack Daniels in her hospital room at that time, and she took a look at that bottle, and she realized, if I have a bottle of Jack in my hospital room, they're probably right.
I was a mess. I was an alcoholic, and I had a problem with prescription pills. And in order to survive, in order to live, I had to change that.
December 5th, 1983. The Betty Ford Center, Rancho Mirage, California.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Taylor, and I'm an alcoholic.
I guess it was the first time really in my life I'd been totally left on my own. And they didn't quite know how to deal with me. I was the first celebrity to ever have gone.
As a journalist, I actually gate-crashed the Betty Ford Center when she was in the... Gone were all the glamorous gowns. She was wearing a sweatsuit, and I had a little chat. I said, "Well, how are you doing? What's it like here?" And she saw the big violet eyes just rolled in her head. She said, looked at me, she said, "Would you like to be here?" She said, "I'd much rather be at home."
Elizabeth Taylor relapsed 5 years later in 1988. And entered the Betty Ford Center once again. But this time, the therapy appeared to work and, by her own accounts, reduced her alcohol intake dramatically. So it's unlikely that alcohol alone caused her death. A common presentation of alcoholism is liver disease, which results in jaundice or yellowing of the skin. But this last photo of Elizabeth doesn't show signs that she had this, so I'm going to discount alcohol.
But Dr. Hunter has found evidence that Elizabeth Taylor was suffering from a chronic lung condition towards the end of her life that can be fatal. Expert pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is probing the underlying causes of the cardiac arrest of Hollywood actress Elizabeth Taylor, who died in March 2011.
So far, I've found that Elizabeth's life has been plagued by addictions to prescription pain medication and alcohol. Although she managed to get these addictions under control before her death, I can't rule out long-term damage playing some role. I've also found evidence that she may have had a disease that can put a huge strain on the heart.
February 27th, 2011, Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, Los Angeles, 24 days before Elizabeth Taylor's death. It's her 79th birthday, and Elizabeth is in the hospital for heart tests as she's been experiencing respiratory problems. Friends and family have gathered to help her celebrate her birthday and join her in watching the Academy Awards.
The Oscars were, of course, a huge part of Elizabeth Taylor's life, right up until near the end. She let out a big cheer when the King's Speech won.
Elizabeth may appear unconcerned about her breathing issues, but Dr. Hunter has found something which could link them to her death.
I've discovered that Elizabeth was diagnosed with COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's a lung condition characterized by restricted airflow due to the narrowing of the airways. The main cause of COPD is smoking, yet another lethal addiction of hers.
Elizabeth's marriage to Nicky Hilton really was the beginning of a lot of trouble for her because she She began smoking at that time. You know, she began to have a view of marriage that wasn't healthy.
Elizabeth Taylor not only did drugs and booze, but she smoked two packs of cigarettes a day and also developed a rather nasty cough.
Smoking kills almost 500,000 people in the United States every year and is the main cause of heart disease. It causes a buildup of fatty material, which narrows the arteries and deposits tar and damaging chemicals in the lungs. But it also makes you highly susceptible to other illnesses, especially those linked to the respiratory system.
People in Hollywood actually dreaded working with Elizabeth Taylor, because she was always coming down with colds and flu.
She did complain periodically about her lungs. She had difficulty taking deep breaths. I just assumed it was smoking cigarettes.
I can see that Elizabeth suffered from pneumonia on a number of occasions, which is a serious respiratory condition. This is where the lungs are filled with fluid containing white blood cells trying to fight off the infection, making it difficult to breathe.
March 4th, 1961. The Dorchester Hotel, London, England. Elizabeth Taylor was in London with her fourth husband, singer and actor Eddie Fisher. She was in town to start filming on the movie epic Cleopatra.
Elizabeth!
Suddenly, Elizabeth collapsed. She had been suffering with breathing problems and flu symptoms.
Her face turned blue, her fingernails turned black. It was a terribly scary situation.
Tell me exactly what happened.
Elizabeth was rushed to the hospital where surgeons battled to save her life.
Elizabeth had gone into respiratory failure, and surgeons had to carry out an emergency tracheotomy where an incision is made into the windpipe so air can enter the lungs via a tube.
She almost died at that point.
I was reported dead. It was on the bulletin board. I even read my own obituaries. It was in all the papers that I had died. I've never had such good reviews.
As huge crowds waited for news and while on the operating table, Elizabeth claimed to have had a near-death experience.
I sort of floated into this tunnel, and there were other figures and this welcoming sun, white sun, and Mike Todd was there. And I wanted to be with him more than anything in the world. And he said, "No, baby, you can't. It's not your time. You can't come over. You have to fight to go back."
Elizabeth did win her fight for life, and she left the hospital fully recovered 3 weeks later.
Elizabeth Taylor stopped smoking in 1990 after further bouts of life-threatening pneumonia. But after years of heavy smoking, the effects on her heart would have been long-lasting. So, I can't rule it out completely as a factor in her death.
March 9th, 2011, 14 days before Elizabeth's death.
We've had the results back.
Her condition is deteriorating, and she's told she needs emergency open-heart surgery.
I can see that the heart valve Elizabeth had repaired 5 years earlier by keyhole surgery was failing. Elizabeth was living on borrowed time, and now open-heart surgery appeared to be her only option.
But Elizabeth has had enough of operating theaters.
For many people who've suffered with health issues, there comes a point where you think, I'm going to dictate my health. I'm not going to let it dictate my life anymore. So I think it's kind of that last stance, you know, of taking some control and saying, no, I'm going to go out my way.
March 10th, 2011. 13 days before her death. Elizabeth has now been transferred to the ICU and is on a ventilator to help her breathe.
Without the ventilator, Elizabeth was not able to get adequate oxygen to her vital organs, including the brain. Her body was shutting down.
Almost 2 weeks later, on March 23rd, Elizabeth Taylor dies, surrounded by her family.
Somebody said, turn on the television. Her face was all over the television screen. When you hear that somebody of whom you were very fond has died, of course it makes you sad.
The reaction around the world was a sort of outpouring of love and support.
I was in my Los Angeles office when the news flash came that Elizabeth Taylor had died. And I must admit a real pang. It was a pang because a huge personality had gone from this planet.
When Elizabeth deceased, I had to say a little prayer for her, and
Elizabeth's long-term heart and lung issues, as well as her many addictions, were catching up with her. All would have certainly played a role in her death. But my investigations also uncovered a condition that famously defined Elizabeth Taylor as a young actress. Could it have ended up as her misfortune?
Legendary Hollywood actress and world-renowned beauty Elizabeth Taylor died from a cardiac arrest on March 23, 2011. So far, leading forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has investigated her battles with alcohol, drugs, and a chronic lung condition as possible causes of her death.
Elizabeth Taylor had a long and complicated medical history, and there is no doubt that her addictions to alcohol, prescription drugs, and smoking would have been factors in her death.
But Dr. Hunter believes the answer to her death could lie in a seemingly harmless birth defect.
During my investigations, I found Elizabeth had a rare genetic mutation, lymphedema distichiasis syndrome, or LDS, which gave her her distinctive double eyelashes that helped define her beauty. Could this have played a role in her worsening health? LDS can affect the normal function of the lymphatic system, which is a network of tissues and organs that help rid the body of toxins and assist in fighting infections.
This could explain why Elizabeth was prone to pneumonia, and there's also evidence that LDS can cause heart defects, explaining her faulty mitral valve. But now Dr. Hunter has found one last piece of evidence that may solve the puzzle as to what caused Elizabeth Taylor's death.
I can see that in 2004, 7 years before her death, Elizabeth was diagnosed with a deadly heart condition called congestive heart failure. This is when the heart is unable to pump sufficiently to maintain blood flow to meet the body's needs, and occurs when the heart has grown weak or stiff. Signs and symptoms commonly include shortness of breath and excessive fatigue. CHF is often the result of a number of factors, including high blood pressure, coronary artery disease, and valvular heart disease, issues that are common for heavy smokers and drinkers. People with the disease can prolong life by changing lifestyle, taking medications, and possibly having heart surgery. But ultimately, congestive heart failure is a life sentence with a life expectancy of around 5 years for 50% of patients.
Dr. Hunter can now reveal what was happening in Elizabeth's body in the moments before her death.
Elizabeth's leaky mitral valve and congestive heart failure meant that her heart had ballooned to an abnormal size and was now unable to pump blood around the body. Her breathing was becoming more labored, as her lungs filled with fluid, and blood flow to the other major organs started to diminish. As Elizabeth's blood pressure gradually dropped, her heart finally stopped beating. What's interesting is that in the end, it appears that Elizabeth Taylor, the fighter and survivor, decided not to fight anymore. Instead of choosing more surgery, which may have prolonged her life, she chose to take control over her death. The control that had evaded her for much of her life, from the loss of control throughout childhood by her mother and the studio, through to the loss of control of her body by her many addictions. So in some ways, she won the final battle.
A funeral today, the day after her death, for Elizabeth Taylor, who died just yesterday at age 79. Her burial today was a private affair, family only, at Forest Lawn Cemetery, final resting place for so many Hollywood celebrities.
This is a woman who lived her life for all it was worth. And by the time she died, I think she was very tired, but she definitely had an amazing life.
Elizabeth Taylor was just a very nice, simple, hardworking actress who happened to be a star.
She was glamorous. She was feisty. She was much married. She was daring.
She was like the most amazing person and drop-dead gorgeous. And she was very funny, very animated.
What is the secret to looking so good?
Just living a very healthy, clean life.
You still know how to bat those lashes so beautifully.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcast1.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's reelz.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.